Welcome to the ShadowNet, everyone. It's Phil, aka Zeroth Maxima. Threat level alpha before we get going. I got two of the nastiest boys around on this episode, so it's gonna be a rough one. My extra special guest today, as always, the APAC champion. It's Will Sokka 234.
Hey, thanks,
how you doing?
Good. It's been a crazy 3 weeks doing some commentary for Euros and Americas, so I was looking forward to a lot of Netrunner.
Living the life. We're so blessed today, I would say. A bonus guest. He's one of the OG Shaper masterminds, the Crit Hit 20 himself. It's Greg Tung.
Howdy.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm excited. After, months of not listening to your podcast, I'm finally here.
You finally made it. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Will, you've played in the Continentals. Greg, you got some similar plans coming up?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be playing tomorrow.
Oh, fantastic. This is probably not going to be out by tomorrow. You want to give people some scoops?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to be coming in with a variation on the 11 ice sports medal list that sort of dominated the UK. Big changes on my end. I'm moving a bit more in the direction of the progenitor of the archetype. For those who remember CTZ Morphling, back when he was playing with Merger, I've moved back in that direction. So I've added advanced assembly lines. I went out of the third Vacheron and cut all the hyperloops. And deck is a lot more focused on scoring the Vacherons instead of exclusively using them as a broken agenda that does nothing.
That sounds dangerously wholesome.
it's going to be good fun. I'm kind of amused that, like, as Blame Changer has evolved, players have been taking all of the toxic components that Eric championed and slowly making it look more and more like a real Netrunner deck.
Yeah.
It's not, but on paper it looks like one, which is cool. And then for Runner, I took sort of the APOC Max that has sort of been like popping up and dominating everything. I believe you were doing some stuff with that, Will, right?
Mm-hmm.
You might have won an event with that somewhere.
Maybe.
And I basically took all the non-APOC cards out and I added Swift and Wanton Destruction. And as it turns out, having your opponent lose four cards in hand every turn reminds me of a pretty fun Runner deck circa summer 2018. It feels a lot like playing Clan Vengeance again. And I'm excited. You get to recur it with Labor Rights and do it every single turn, and you don't have to think.
That's key to winning a lot, is not thinking. The more you could cut down on that, the better you do, I think.
Absolutely. Stay hydrated, don't think about Netrunner, and then that's the key to success.
Sounds like some good decks to me. Where'd you place, now that we're in the future?
Oh, I probably won the event, right?
Yeah, probably.
Pretty good. I've actually never won a tournament. Did you know that?
That's shocking to me. You placed highly, event, right?
Yeah. I've done well at a couple of events. But the only event that I have won was an unofficial event. It was the World Second Chance Tournament hosted by the good folks at StimHack. But otherwise, I've never won an FFG event, and I've never won an ESA event. So really happy that I finally won this.
If it's any consolation, I've never either.
Well, then we're equals today.
Absolutely. Maybe not for long.
I don't.
Will, you had some big plans about winning Intercontinentals. Can we talk about everyone here who has qualified for Intercontinentals, plans to win Intercontinentals?
Oh, man. Like, I'm very surprised that, to me, the decks that came out of European Continentals was nothing new. So, like, Hivemind Max was there. The deck didn't change a lot. And it was that, there was sports, and there's the Acme deck that I had worked with Bridgman,
yeah.
which was not a surprise to me because I had worked on it. But I think like that was like the only deck that came out of it. So I'm very surprised that after APAC and after Euros, we still, like, there's nothing that's like, oh, like this is like this busted thing that somebody's found. So, maybe that'll change, or maybe it has changed after American Continentals. And then we'll go into this very interesting 1 week period where everybody's trying to figure out if this new thing is good and worth continuing to play.
Oh my God, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, that checks out to me. I can't say I'm too surprised that nothing new came out of Europe, because, I mean, you got the UK. They're not going to do anything. And you got Germany, which we pilfered the HB Spice from originally. Like, what else are they going to come up with?
Well, I mean, I was expecting that they would come up with something crazy for the runner side. I was expecting something, like, brand new. And, like, maybe, you know, because Greg won the one American Continentals with the Swift 1 Destruction Mac. So I was expecting something along those lines out of NWE.
You know, I was kind of expecting to see if Pencil had finally figured out how to play Tech Trader post Geist.
I have heard rumors that that's still in the working, and he's still trying to do that.
Saving it for Worlds?
I guess so.
Got to bring out the big guns, I guess, yeah.
Absolutely, not wasting that on a chump change event like European Continentals.
Why would you? Honestly.
No. Where's the pride in beating a non-American?
Greg, you've worked with Nisei in the past. Can you give me, and I think everyone listening, well, I'm sure some people know, but can you give us like an overview of like what you've done, what you've contributed to the game, that kind of thing?
Oh, sure, yeah. So for those who don't really know me or my contributions, I served as the first lead designer for Nisei. So I served as lead designer for the entirety of the Ashes cycle, which was Downfall and Uprising. And then I sort of created the original version of System Gateway, which kind of was my final product. I believe there's like some loose designs of mine that will appear in some upcoming sets that June has served as lead designer for.
Oh, that's fun. But you don't even know what twists are coming on them.
No, I intentionally took a little bit of a breather just to focus on my career.
Yeah.
And it's actually been really exciting because I'm kind of going to go into the next set blind with everyone else. And I'm really excited to see what Nisei failed to consider without my expertise. But I'm sure it's all completely broken now.
I've heard this comments about you being lead designer and then comments about like you no longer being lead designer in terms of the position that Shaper will be in. And I feel like I'm, you know, you're known as the guy that plays Shaper and makes it good even if everybody thinks it's bad. And I think for a good while, I felt like, at least locally, I did that in Edmonton. And I would play, like, for example, when Haley won Worlds and then, like Tapworm and, like, Zekon and all that stuff got banned, I still played that deck and I just kind of transitioned it into something like a Top Hat deck with Insight, and I was like winning a lot of stuff with that. So I kind of like see myself in the same kind of idea of making, like, really trying to make Shaper work, and like Shaper is my favorite faction as well. And I guess what I'm trying to get at is I think a lot of people were suggesting that the reason that Shaper isn't great, or like people don't see it to be that great, is because when you're lead designer, you were a lot more careful with printing good Shaper cards because you knew the power of Shaper. And in your mind, Shaper was already balanced because you were so good at it.
No, that's horseshit. No, they nerfed all my cards. Artist cost 2 when I designed it.
That would have made so much sense to me.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk too much about that actual experience. I think that the development team did a phenomenal job, and they're continuing to do a phenomenal job, and they've gotten more and more talented at producing high quality product since the work that I've done. I think that the testament to like how good Gateway looks when I have not improved as a lead designer at all is kind of testament to that. It's such a good product, and that speaks to that. But I think that there's always a little bit of fear with designing Shaper cards because the successful strategies in the past for Shaper have been so polarizing. Whether it's like a Magnum Opus lock deck or like a Pawn Shop lock deck or like a Congress Kate. A lot of these Shaper decks, when they were successful, with the exception of like prepaid Kate, I think people really didn't enjoy playing against them. They were very passive, very long games. Kind of the closer is just sort of waiting for the opponent to get frustrated and misplay. because you're not spending many slots on proactively ending the game.
Yeah.
And that was something that, you know, in terms of base support cards that allow you to be creative and aggressive within Shaper, that didn't really exist in the state that FFG left the game in my personal opinion, with the exception of like the Haley tools for these pawn shop lock decks with whatever win condition you choose to use, whether it's Insight Top Hat or you know, just the classic indexing plan,
yeah,
from RevCore. So that kind of was sort of a loose goal with Ashes. I think it was extremely obvious with the number of economy slots that we dedicated towards Shaper cards and Gateway.
Yeah.
And I think that hopefully now that they have those foundational tools, we'll start to see some really, you know, more off the rails alternate win conditions and multi-access tools and ways to get into servers that are now possible, because Shapers don't have to just sadly stare at the pile of neutral cards to fund their goals.
That is absolutely the blessing and the curse of Shaper and Gateway. Yeah, it's a ton of economy, it's some draw tools, but yeah, there's not too much in the way of tech. And I absolutely love Gateway. I've used it to teach a couple new people the game. It's been incredibly smooth. I was wondering if you could tell us about, like, what is the inception of Gateway? You know, there was obviously a time where the idea came to people in Nisei and it was more and more fleshed out into what it is today on release, right? But what did it start as, and, you know, did that change along the way? You know, what things happened that we never heard about? Give us the inside scoops.
Yeah. So initially, I would say sort of the inception of the project was when the head of rules, Jade, was really pushing for this idea of sets being more than just a collection of cards. I think that distribution model is fine, but you know, say what you will about how abysmal Terminal Directive's campaign was, the idea was really, really cool.
Yeah.
To have like a game within an expansion set. And one of the things that was a goal for Nisei for a very long time was finding a way to get new people playing and have new people enthusiastic about playing in this entrenched community, right?
Because
at this point, we're all really, really good. I think most of the people that are just regular players, even if you don't consider yourself that great, you're probably better than the first world champion.
Played more, that's for sure.
Exactly. You know, we learned, we've gotten smarter, and we've developed mechanisms, and, you know, we know that Wayland sucks, and yeah. So the goal with Gateway when I was originally making it was I wanted a product that was really cheap, because I wanted people to, you know, not have to buy every Nisei product, and especially didn't want them to have to go out and look for FFG product in order to play a functional version of Netrunner.
Absolutely. And yeah, startup is such a great testament to that, I think. Just a fantastic little format that, yeah, you could pick up for, I don't know, 100, 150 bucks?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a lot easier to manage just remembering what possibilities are present in that format, so you can feel more confident with your running. You don't have to think about things like hard-hitting news and economic warfare, cards that do have their place in the game, but you may not necessarily know how to play around them. MC austerity policy, diversion of funds.
Yeah.
Still a lot of cards that kind of trip up newer players. There's just, you can focus more on being the best player that you can with having to commit as much finances and as much commitment towards card pool memorization. So I think that's nothing but good.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Was the dual deck aspect of it in from like the start, or is that something that just kind of organically bubbled up as the thing was coming together?
We had tried for a while to figure out a dual deck model for products prior to Gateway.
Okay.
So it was kind of a pre-existing idea that kind of got mixed into the product. When I originally conceived the product, one idea that did not make it through all the way was kind of graduating through the factions as opposed to having a neutral runner. So it would have had a more comprehensive learn to play guide, and each faction would kind of introduce a mechanic, like this faction introduces damage and this faction introduces tags. So you kind of like learn more and more. And then when you're done, okay, now you've played with all the cards, go nuts with them. I think that model involved a higher number of cards needing to be in the product, which affected price value.
Yeah.
And I think that it also involved cutting a lot of things that people would probably have been disappointed not to see, such as my original version did not have consoles in it. It had one generic neutral console for all factions to use, because I didn't want people having to deal with the messiness of the console rule,
right?
Which rules then deleted. Which
thanks
I'm so happy
that,
about
by
that.
By the way, rules. That's really cool that we can now overwrite a console. Yet to do it.
That was obviously for the purposes of your 2017 second place world deck, right?
So that I don't look silly anymore. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that the consoles ended up getting added to the product, because I think that they're all extremely cool.
Mm-hmm.
My original version also didn't have identities. It was more of just play with the cards, don't worry about influence and whatnot. And then once you graduate out of the gateway product, just, you know, get some IDs. Back in my local community, there was a concept that I think maybe not doesn't exist outside of it, where we would just, you know, we had a new player and we just give them our duplicate copies of the IDs. Because what are we going
to
do with them?
Yeah, no, I've definitely done that. We used to, like, buy different data packs, and then we'd, like, swap the IDs inside. Because, yeah, you don't need three. Little did we know, Rebirth would get printed, and now I'm like, oh, I do wish I had two of some of them. But, that's what alts are for.
100%. The identities kind of got designed almost halfway through the development of the V0 file that was eventually handed off to dev. And so the consoles and the IDs, not much of that is me at all.
Yeah.
I would say the notable exception is Tau, which did not change at all from the version that I designed.
Oh, wow.
Tau's my baby. And for those of y'all who have not read the reviews on NRDB for Tau, please do so. There's some phenomenal insight there.
Absolutely.
And I think that it kind of exemplifies the best of our community.
Some great thinkers putting some deep thought into those NRDB reviews for Tau.
Absolutely. You know, we can see how it dominated the Continental Championship.
Yeah.
I think it's exactly as powerful as people thought it was.
No, absolutely. Yeah, you really goofed on that one.
Whatever.
That's interesting to me. Like, you're not even at V1 yet. You're at V0. You've got all these big changes going in. Is it being playtested, like, internally with you and a couple people? Or are you just, like, playing it out in your head and you're like, oh yeah, it's missing consoles at some point? Like, how does this process work? How do you even start coming up with something like this?
Yeah, you know, at the time, I don't know how it's being done anymore. You know, I would just meet up with people that were interested on a Discord, and we would, or in person at the game store at the time.
Right.
Because it was in design pre-pandemic.
Back in the olden days.
I know. It feels weird to think about the fact that I was in a game store unmasked with a bunch of strangers playtesting Gateway.
Yeah.
It went back to, I believe I produced the V0, which is what I called any document that was before dev touched it, back in, it must have been maybe May or June 2019.
Hmm.
And a few cards got majorly changed. We had some major fundamental changes to the product as a whole, such as the factions and the advanced pack versus the starter decks.
Yeah.
And then we had a couple of chunks of cards like Fermenter and Tread Lightly and Tau that just did not change at all. I think Seamless Launch didn't really change at all either. That's a fun one. I really like the card, but I think that's probably the most polarizing card aside from maybe Precision Design.
It's undeniably fun, but yeah, the speed it introduces to HB, already a very fast faction. Yeah, polarizing.
Yeah. I was honestly really excited to use Seamless Launch to score Nisei Mark IIs.
Oh yeah.
And I think that I designed the card before Lacosta Grid got designed. That card was kind of produced out of a development need.
For Jinteki to be able to do anything?
Well, they wanted like an alternate Jinteki upgrade to just ending the run.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the only successful real upgrade design for Jinteki Glacier at the time. I think whomever came up with Lacosta in the development team, I think that was an awesome design. I love that card so much.
It's fantastic.
But it's kind of interesting how, Seamless Launch, which I expected to be played primarily out of faction, ended up primarily being played in faction with those neutral agendas. Sandbox was also a card that I kind of... Sandbox and Precision Design are both cards that I did not really touch at all, with the exception of I'm responsible for Precision Design having plus one hand size. Because I thought the ID looked really boring.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Just need a little something else.
So when you're playing Precision Design, this always happens to me, and like I'm sure once you play a lot of Precision Design, you get used to it. But I'm so used to having a 5-card hand size. So when you're playing PD, you have to you do your mandatory draw and then you think through your turn. And it's like, okay, well, if I res Spin Doctor here and I play these two cards, I'm going to end with 6 cards in hand. Oh, that's no good. I have to discard a card. And then I always go through the train of thought, make sure I end my turn at 5, click the end turn button. And like, you know, it doesn't tell you that you have more hand size. So it is only until you end your turn at 6 and you plan to discard one and then you hit end turn and it lets you end turn. That's where you're like, oh yeah, the ID does something else as well.
That's really interesting. I've never actually gotten that feedback before on that card. And personally, this kind of feels a little bit weird to say because it makes me sound like I don't know what I'm doing, but I've never actually played the version of PD that has been printed, save for maybe like one or two games, just prepping for Continentals.
Yeah, it's such a natural thing for me, at least, is how many cards am I going to have at the end of my turn? And like, if it's more than 5, am I okay discarding one of these cards? And if the answer is no, I have to rethink what I'm going to do that turn.
Yeah,
and that's like especially true for the Corp. So that's like it gets me every time when I play PD, unless I like repeatedly tell myself and like remind myself that I actually have a 6-card hand size.
Yeah, there's a risk of this sort of design faux pas of putting too many words on a card. And even though Precision Design doesn't have a lot of words, having two independent abilities that, while synergistic, don't relate to each other in their moment-to-moment use, that could be definitely considered kind of like a sort of a shortcoming. But honestly, I think I was sincerely a little bit just like longing for the days of CI and having like that sort of like homage to that part of HB's identity, you know, Cybernetics Court also rotating.
I think the design of PD is great. I also think the design of Seamless Launch is great. Like, I think that the fact that, you know, for the last while, like, one of the biggest decks was this Precision Design Seamless Launch. Like, I like that. And I've heard a lot of people say that, you know, like, isn't that the kind of Netrunner that, like, people have always wanted, is that you got this deck who, like, it installs ice, it puts some defensive upgrades, and it scores agendas, and it's, like, fair, quote-unquote.
Yeah, the runner can get in.
Yeah, yeah, and I feel like I like the design of like the HB stuff. I think if there's an issue anywhere, it would be that the agendas are too good. But I think that's like a separate thing that is like not a negative towards PD and Seamless Launch.
Sure. Yeah. With every Nisei product, we've encountered a brand new problem with the exploration of the design space of these agendas, right? With Ashes, we had the sort of proliferation of these really competitive defensive 5/3s, and we discovered the problems with that, which were never something that we had experienced in Netrunner prior.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Gateway, I don't think that many people were considering these extremely quote-unquote boring agenda suites of Sandbox plus Office, and how powerful it is to just have this really streamlined, lean play style.
Yeah, just money that lets you do what you're supposed to be doing, right? There's no friction anymore to, you know, it's one avenue where you're not being constricted anymore when you play these decks, is that, yeah, the money just comes in for doing what you're doing anyways, which is neat.
Right.
But it's definitely an aspect of the game that smooths away and is yeah, less interactive in many ways.
So
yeah, I would agree with that.
I have a question here. So I know that June has mentioned this And that June is trying to push the length of games to be shorter, and which means to me at least that decks are going to be faster on both sides. Is that something that impacted you, or something that went through your head when you were designing?
Nope. I think that it aligns with June's goals, and I agree strongly with what she has been moving towards. I think that there's this fear that if games are faster, that players are going to be making fewer decisions. And that's just not the case, right? We are trying to have games in which we're making more meaningful decisions on a regular basis, as opposed to stockpiling money for several turns and then deciding, well, okay, am I ready to blow it all now on whatever my plan is, whether it's rezzing all my ice or punitiving or, you know, making the three runs for the APOC. I think having more dynamic decisions constantly and being able to produce a situation in which one card effect forces you to reevaluate the plan that you were moving towards initially, it keeps things exciting. And that's something that I really appreciate out of other games that I enjoy playing tactically. And it's something that I'm really excited to see how that moves in Netrunner in the future. With regards to like off-world office and seamless launch, cards like that were in Gateway, they were in Gateway from the very beginning, and they were more there because of this goal that I was trying to figure out how to articulate exclusively through the cards, which is, how do you score an agenda? Because I found personally, when I was learning how to play, that was something that I had no idea how to do. Like, the idea of trying to... Did either of you, when you were learning how to play, did the idea of a scoring window make sense to you when you didn't, like, have a full comprehensive understanding of the card pool?
Absolutely not.
I would say that it wasn't something that I thought about until that term was given to me, and that kind of let me like categorize and kind of pay attention to that a lot more.
Yeah.
I think the concept of a scoring window, and that, you know, you don't have a lot of money right now, I can probably put an agenda in here, and I think that this ice is good enough to protect it, is like something that kind of just happens when you're playing the game, I think. But when you attach the term to it, and you attach the term like scoring window, like now it's a more...
It's easier to like, look for them, right?
Yeah. More of like an obvious concept for both the Corp and the Runner to look for.
So here's the question then. When you're designing a beginner product, how do you get players to start proactively trying to score, even if they see that, okay, all I have is, you know, like a Palisade and a white space on a remote, and my opponent has a cleaver and a buzzsaw? How am I going to go and score an agenda now? The hope, which I think ended up being realized in way stronger than I would have expected, was you draw a seamless launch for the first time, you read the card, and you realize, oh, my off-world office doesn't have to look like an off-world office anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This is why all my cards are face down, and why this game is different from, you know, a Dude Basher card game. So a lot of the cards in the product are kind of geared towards making you think about these concepts, even though you might not necessarily be in a community that's introducing the same ideas to you. That's the same reason why Off-World Office scores 7, because hopefully that credit total gives you the confidence to push again.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And I think teaching the game, it's definitely... Playing Corp, I think, has made a lot more sense in Gateway than any other time in the game for a new player. Cards just work together. The bonuses are obvious on something like Palisade. Like, yeah, you could put on the Centrals, but it sucks. You should put it on a remote. Yeah.
It seemed extremely frustrating to me personally that the narrative of learning Netrunner is find someone who knows how to play Netrunner, then play Runner against them playing Corp.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if you have a friend who wants to learn how to play with you?
Hearing all that, that's like, I've never heard that side of the coin before about like Off-World Office Seamless and like a new player's experience playing Corp. I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's very nice, in like designing a set of cards in that way to kind of teach the, somebody new playing Corp, what to do if they're, you know, if they're looking to score an agenda. I think, like, in the past, you would try to, you know, like, install advanced, like, a June bug, and then try to make them spend money, and then you're trying to, like, create those scoring windows.
More of a bluff, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I wanted to say, like, it makes a lot of sense hearing that. But, like, the one thing that I've heard that I agree with about these agendas that gain you money is the aspect of when, from the runner's perspective, when the corp is putting an agenda in the remote, they're advancing it or they're threatening to score it, either with seamless or other means. When playing runner, this is something that I've thought of a lot when I started playing, and I've heard it from other people as well, is that you have the ability to think to yourself, okay, if the corp scores this agenda, it's going to cost them resources because they need to spend a turn advancing it and they need to spend time and money. And then I'm going to basically set up to maybe like install my R&D interface, if that's a legal card or something like that. And you're trying to like set up to like hurt the corp in other areas. And you're going to basically let the corp score this agenda with knowing that it's going to cost them money and resources. And because that these agendas are tempo positive and they gain the corp credits, it kind of takes away that aspect a little bit. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with 100% of what you just said. I think that in choosing to play an agenda suite that is almost exclusively dominated by tempo positive agendas, you have shored a fundamental weakness of corp play. And that can be extremely dissatisfying to players who appreciate that sort of tug of war element. Where it's particularly problematic is we've currently entered a metagame where that play style is the strongest play style.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or, you know, you and I seem to both agree that sports is better, but it's pretty darn close.
I think you could argue that sports is like in a very similar way, is that you... Like, it's not, actually, that's not necessarily true, but you still gain tempo, you still gain credits or cards when you score an agenda out of sports,
yeah.
And that kind of, like, keeps you going, and it doesn't hurt your tempo as much when you score an agenda as you would maybe, like, a year or two ago.
Yeah.
Sure. So, the question is, then, is it wrong to have a strategy in which you've chosen to deny yourself cards that affect the runner's ability to succeed and focus exclusively on the quality of your own engine? Is that deck existing a problem? And I think that if the quality of other win conditions is inferior to this never advance econ game, then the answer is yes. I think that PD is a really cool deck. I think it does really fun things. I think that it's also very frustrating when you have to, as a runner, design a deck around the expectation of, I'm probably going to make a bunch of fruitless runs against, you know, this really boring, unpleasant remote server, because people, you know, justifiably don't like the mathematical element of just... how economically detrimental is this run, mm-hmm. and how am I balancing my credit total? You know, that sort of like more almost Euro game like element where it's just resource management game mechanics, as opposed to taking risks and having exciting moments where the game just sort of wildly swings in one player's favor. And I think there's no right answer, right? It comes down to, what do you want to be possible within your game? Personally, when I was designing, I was always sort of looking to the future of, you know, I want to just see more and more possibilities emerge after we, of course, have player confidence. And a lot of Ashes was about gaining that player confidence with very safe designs that existed within the space of what FFG was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Gateway was kind of similar, but I got to get some really fun stuff in there, like Neurospike and Clearinghouse, to sort of like introduce, you know, we're going to start exploring other ways in which players can win the game. And I'm really excited to see what comes next, because I think there's a place in which this tempo positive econ agenda suite is good, but you might have to choose something else instead. because it may offer something that allows you to beat the like the APOC decks that are geared to beat PD. Maybe, you know, there's a viable kill condition that's more entertaining and interactive than play PE and hope they hit the snare on the HQ run.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something about Neverner that I've always really liked, is that if there's one deck that somebody is just titled this is the best deck, you can usually always build something that counters that deck. That's not necessarily great across the field, but if you've got one deck that's really, really good and really, really popular, then you can build this like niche counter deck. And there's a lot of tools at Netrunner within the deck building to let you do that.
Yeah, and that's exactly how I came up in One American Continentals 2021 with Swift Wanton Max.
Yeah, exactly.
So prescient. Amazing. Amazing job.
Yeah, thank you. It was a good tournament to be my first win.
One for the books. Yeah, no, just on that, I was just thinking, yeah, we complain about these tempo-positive agendas, but one facet of that is that, you know, face-checking ice right now carries a much higher risk than a lot of the history of the game. You know, if you go back to the early days, you just face-check all day, you grab a tag, whatever, you can shake it off, sure, and the corp ends up with no money. And that was a big runner strategy. You know, face-checking now in this point of the game is rarely done unless you really know what you're doing, right? So I think one of Nisei's stated goals, well, June's at least, going forward, is to tone down the power of the ice. And I think that will also help bring down the power of these, like, tempo-positive agendas.
Absolutely agreed. One piece of advice I have, by the way, if you're playing against PD, is don't be afraid to run blind as much. Getting those gatekeepers rezzed during a pre-Rashida fire phase, mm-hmm, and then having them be strength zero for your Amakua or for your Unity, that goes a long ways towards helping out. And despite the power level of ice right now, PD has to spend so much of its influence and game plan towards keeping that efficient engine rolling. It doesn't really have much to punish you on a face check.
Yeah, that's a great point. And like turn one drafter face check, if there's nothing in the bin, not that bad.
Yep. I think there's a lot of fear of like letting gatekeeper fire, and it's not that bad.
What's next after you guys win Continentals? You guys win, well, which one of you is going to win Intercontinentals? Debate me that. You guys are both bringing Shaper, obviously.
You want to split?
Yep.
All right, ID, all you heard it here. First co-championships.
We'll beat everybody in the other 10 players, and then we'll play each other in the final. And then, you know, we'll probably play like a GFI exchange of information deck and just tie every game.
Simultaneously.
Until they give up.
You can design the text of the Intercontinental Champ card, and I'll do the name.
Beautiful. I love it.
Oh, and then we'll have Phil come in and do the art.
I do love it. Nisei, hit me up about the art.
Will you do it for us? That'd be sweet.
I would love to do the art for it.
All right, fantastic. I want a turtle.
There we go.
what are you guys' least favorite cards in the game right now? I'm curious about that.
Well, not a very spicy answer, but CTM, it's just, I know it's not good right now, but...
Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong.
It's still too good. It's still too good. Let me trash those assets. I just want to trash those assets and not be penalized. I want to keep my little Shaper credits far from those tags. That's all.
How do you feel about modern tag punishment with regards to like the ability to float tags versus CTM these days?
Honestly, no one plays CTM, so I haven't played them in very long.
I end a lot of my turns with tags versus CTM these days.
I could see it. There's less critical resources you really need to protect. Yeah, the punishment, I think, is lesser, and I guess that's by design.
Yeah, the decision to remove closed accounts was super conscious.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Me too. I really like the design of market forces. I really like a lot of the single tag punishment that we have in the game right now, mm-hmm, like EOI and Retribution. High profile target is an anomaly, but, you know, it'll rotate someday.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily single tag punishment.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sorry. I let it, my disdain of Freeland bleed out again.
Is that your choice then?
For me? Well, so, I mean, high-profile target decks are pretty terrible right now. So even though I hate the card, I'm not sure that it's really irritating me too much. I would say that Mouseless is pretty frustrating right now.
Yep.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Just the fact it's really, really hard to evaluate the consequence of breaking versus letting fire, and the math is so unpleasant.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a good thing. Having a game in which ice fire sometimes is cool, but like the deck of the week right now at the time of recording says, you know, tilt rope is Mari. It is tilting.
I played against that in the APAC Continentals, and that was like the problem, is that, you know, if I'm gonna make runs, I can run into a ping, I can run into a turnpike or anything else that this deck has, but if you run into a Mausolus, you have to, if you're an Anarch, you gotta pay 3 to install your Orchestra, 6 to break it, and they still get a credit.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
Will, yeah. Where's your hate train taking us?
So I have a boring answer and a spicier answer. My boring answer is Vacheron.
Mm.
I agree with like all the things that have already been said about Vacheron. Like it's a, like as long as HB has this combo deck, like Vacheron's gonna fit really nicely into it, and it's like a very delayed, like having the ability to like delay 3 points just feels really bad for the runner side. And it enables a lot of unfair things when you can change the number of agenda points in your deck, essentially.
As the extra special guest in this episode, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we know your opinion. We know where your spot is here.
Yeah. I'm interested in, like, Greg, your thoughts on that.
Which one?
Like, I just, Vacheron in general, and like, whether or not you think it should stay or go.
I'm so sorry, Morgan. I know that you're really proud of the card, and I love a lot of your designs. I hated Vacheron from the moment that it got introduced to the Uprising file, and I hate it right now. I never saw what it offered the game that was fun.
Oh man, so this isn't even something that came up as a result of recent events.
Yeah, so I it's weird to say this as someone who has designed tempo positive agenda off-world office, but I really am peeved about cards that offer a player immunity to risk.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. There was, I'm not a Nisei, they can't fire me anymore. There was an upgrade back in like early parts of Uprising that it was the only card I ever used like a veto power on it. And it was basically like an upgrade that you could use it to return the cards installed in the remote server back into HQ.
Okay.
Huh.
And I really, really hated the fact that if you played that card, you could go and install and advance an agenda, and if the runner ran it, you were like, okay, you spent the credits and nothing happened.
Yep.
Because now, even, you know, it's like a BioVault that I don't have to prep.
Right.
It's just no tempo loss, no risk. I can just, as long as I have this upgrade, I'm good. And I hate that. And similarly, I hate the fact that, you know, in the mid game when I'm playing Sports Metal, I can install a Naked Vacheron, and there is no risk to me doing that whatsoever, unless my opponent, you know, is world champion Limes with 3 imps.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree with you.
So would you? That's interesting, because you described the card, and I was like, wait, there's a card called Daruma that does that, doesn't it?
Daruma requires setup. You have to have another remote with a card installed in it.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah, that's a little bit more prep.
Yeah. So if you have to do some work, like, I don't mind BioVault. BioVault involves spending a turn or getting a Lacosta, you know, engine ticking, and you had to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to go install, upgrade, install Nisei Mark II Advance. We were back in the universe, you know, at the time where, you know, MT was a card that you were allowed to play, and Jinteki Glacier was good. I think that when your decisions are 100% correct to make, regardless of the state of the board, then that card maybe should not exist.
Oh, that's fair.
Because the goal is making decisions, right? And if your decision is made by the card, regardless of whether you're ahead or behind, then that's really disappointing.
Absolutely. This makes me think of one of the things I hear dev talk about a lot is, like, they don't know what to do with Jinteki. You know, what should Jinteki actually do in the game? And I think we saw a bit of that confusion with the design of Gateway. I guess, well, you know, out of the court factions.
No, you're right.
Well, which one is the least inspiring? It's by far Jinteki. Their cards, I don't think, really have a unifying... Well, okay, the theme is putting stuff in the trash and getting paid for it, but...
We have successfully designed two less interesting Palanas in a row.
Yeah.
I want one more. Make it a hat trick.
Where do you think it should go? Like, what should be the direction of Jinteki? Like, if you could wipe as many cards of the faction as you wanted to and start as fresh as you want, what do you make Jinteki do?
So, the way that I like Jinteki the most is where Jinteki plays the most with the idea of hidden information, where the net damage is happening on... Either it's happening on the runner turn because of an action the runner took,
mm-hmm.
or it's happening on the corp turn because of an action the runner did not take. In contrast to Wayland, where Wayland deals its damage as consequence of punishing the runner for what they did. ISC Scorch or Punitive or something like that. So I was really interested with the idea of using archives as a resource in Jinteki. I was really interested in the idea of, you know, the classic sort of Mushin gambit, albeit not getting to do it with Mushin. I like this. I really like incorporating that shell game element into factions or into strategies that aren't exclusively just grind you out PE.
Right.
Or, you know, ideally you can incorporate elements of that philosophy into not PE at all. And I think that you see elements of that philosophy in the Jinteki cards that we have released so far, even if I also think that those cards failed to achieve those goals.
I think they are individually fun, like the Ice, Diviner, and Karuna. I think are really fun cards. They're just not
absolutely, yeah,
good a lot of the times.
Yeah, and like the idea of a Restoring Humanity deck where you're constantly trying to get something face down, I think is really cool. But the payoff for that is $1, and we didn't have slots in Gateway to release other cards that focus on Archives Matters and
right.
on face down cards matter. I hope we see more of that in the future. Because, you know, that was something that I was very interested in exploring in the future after Gateway was finished. Will that happen? I have no idea. But, you know, that's an area in which I think that we absolutely could have done better.
Yeah. No, I look forward to see what Dev is cooking up for the next few sets.
Yeah, me too. But yeah, that was a bit roundabout. So the answer is I want more mind games and hidden information out of Jinteki.
Heck yes. Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. I wanted to complete what I was hinting at with my least favorite card.
I'm excited.
So I've talked about this in the past before about Game Changer. I feel like I don't like it when the runner has to think twice about stealing an agenda.
Okay.
Because I think that's very counter to what you're taught as a new player. You're like, okay, like you're the runner, you're trying to steal some agendas, that's how you win the game. And I feel like it can get confusing for people when there are situations where you're like, okay, you don't actually want to steal agendas. I think like one thought that came to mind, I won't go around what I'm saying. I think that sports metal, just as an ID, does that. And I don't like that about that ID, is that just like right off the get-go, you have to think about like, am I actually okay with stealing an agenda here because it's going to help the corp?
Right.
I don't like that aspect of what sports metal does. And I think especially in combination with something like Hyperloop, so you get a Rashida effect for the corp if you steal an agenda, and that's just not good for you. Like, I don't like that about that aspect of the game. There is other cards like Punitive, for example, where you don't want to steal an agenda because you might die. But in that situation, like Punitive is like a very, like it warps your entire corp deck and your entire agenda suite. And you kind of have to like build your whole deck around it. And there's like that whole money situation. Like there's counterplay to Punitive where you can kind of sit back, money up, and wait to steal an agenda later. Mm-hmm. Whereas stuff like Sports Metal in combination with Hyperloop and Fast Break and effects like Game Changer, there's like really nothing that you can do after the game has started to kind of respond to that differently. Like you can't decide to put Imp in your deck, right? Once you've decided you're not putting Imp in your deck, you don't have Imp in your deck anymore. Yeah, like just that whole like thinking twice before stealing an agenda thing as the runner.
One really interesting observation that I'm kind of thinking about with what you just said is the fact that Sports Metal is kind of the only instance of when you do the thing that I want you to do, a good thing happens to me instead of, yes, a bad thing happens to you.
Exactly.
So you're in so much more control of the flow of the game because you can't control what clicks, how the runner spends their clicks. You have so much control out of the outcome of how they spend the clicks. Relative to something exactly. Like PE or Harpsichord.
Right.
Exactly. And I think this is like, it's similar to, I guess, what ended up causing SSL endorsement to get banned, is that it's good if I score it, it's good if you steal it. That thing, I like something like Offworld Office or Nisei Mark II or like Cyberdeck Sandbox in the way that it's like, it benefits the corp if the corp scores it, but if the runner steals it, there's no benefit to you, which I think, in my mind, is how it should work when you lose an agenda. You know?
That makes a lot of sense. I think that's a very smart way to think about that idea.
Hit the hail on the head. Hell yeah.
I don't have anything useful to contribute to that idea, because I just agree.
It is a fully complete and correct idea, in my opinion, as well.
It's almost like you're good at Netrunner.
Something like that. Shall we wrap this one up, guys?
Sure. How do we conclude ShadowNet?
I think we ask if anyone has anything to shout out.
Sure. We all have.
Shout outs to Greg for winning American Continentals.
Fantastic win. Absolutely dominant.
Do you guys know how much I've embarrassed myself over the course of this podcast? Because I haven't considered that people are going to listen to it after it's finished. And then they're going to look and they're going to go see that I got 40th.
It's a lesson in hubris for everyone, I think. So it's got value that way.
Fair enough. I think I'd like to go make a shout out to your competitors over at Blumscast, Orbital Tangent. I'm really excited to go to OTG in a couple of weeks.
It sounds like a good time, yeah.
I'm extremely excited. I am going to force myself to play Shaper at that event, regardless of whether it is correct or not.
Excellent. You got a bounty on you at that event?
I did indeed place above top 16 at a high level event. So yes, I will be there with a button.
I think that'll neither of us are going, but it'd be great to go. No, traveling internationally right now. I was thinking about it. I was on the verge, but no.
You don't want to risk your health and drive 8 hours to go to scenic Roseville, Minnesota.
Ooh, I would love to go to Roseville, Minnesota, to the Game Center. That sounds so great to me. It's more like a 20-hour drive from here, I think. I was trying to bully Will into driving me, but that didn't work out.
Well, let me tell you, it has an interstate.
Yeah, go on.
I think that's all I've seen the complete last time list. I've been there. Yep, you can go get your tires changed as well. It's quite a venue.
It sounds so fantastic.
The game store is so cool, though. I'm so excited to be back there, you know, vaccinated and masked with friends that I haven't seen in a very long time.
I'm actually curious about how Games Enter itself as an entity will receive Android Netrunner, you know? It was quite the hit back in the FFG days, but now they're not bound to the gag order that FFG has imposed over Netrunner. So, you know, maybe they'll be pretty hype.
That is true. I have a lot of stories that I would love to share someday, and those stories would not put certain employees of certain companies at risk for their support of what we do.
Come back in a decade or so.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm really excited to go there and maybe see some FFG employees too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you know we complain and we're extremely good at it. But in spite of that, I love the game that Fantasy Flight made, and I will be forever grateful for the work that Lucas and Damon and Boggs and many other names contributed towards this culture that we're all a part of.
Well yeah, said.
Did you know that as you listed those names, your name is the next one that comes up?
Ah, shit.
Did it to yourself.
I'm one of the four that ruined Netrunner.
Yep.
Well, you can always beat me at OTG and go and get yourself a nice shiny prize for doing so. Yes.
Those prizes look sick.
Feel free to take out that rage, spend a good 65-minute round telling me about why Rozeki is not good game design, actually, and I will be contractually obligated to listen to you. It'll be great. And give you things for it, because you will beat me.
Yeah, you get to win sweet Mean Lady alt artists, I think.
They are super cool.
So good.
And one of my favorite IDs, Mirror Morph, gets a treatment, which I hope that I get paired up against someone else, because I would love to win a... How do you get the foil ones for that?
I have no idea. Do you think I think read rules? Not my style. No.
I think you got to beat me to get the foil one, right?
Yeah, that's probably true.
Maybe if I lose enough, I can make some sort of argument that I did defeat myself that day.
You played yourself. Yeah, you need a prize.
You just gotta win. You gotta win once, right? You don't have to. We don't have to sweep you. You just have to split.
Oh, I don't know the rules.
When you negotiate, you'll just you'll be at top tables. Honestly.
I barely know how to play Netrunner.
Clearly. Yeah.
Well, I have a question. You guys are here. I can ask someone in a human space. What happens when you Omar and then you choose to access HQ and there's a Crisium rezzed on HQ?
Access HQ, but you don't get a successful run.
Right.
Did you have a successful run on Archives then?
You did not.
No.
Yeah, so I
know. You made a successful run, but it was a successful run on no server?
Correct.
Because you have to have a successful run to trigger Omar.
Yes, and that successful run becomes a successful HQ run, but it cannot be a successful run on HQ because of Crisium.
So there's updated text on Omar that says, if it would be successful, change the search. Like so basically the game checks if it would be successful, and if the Archives run would be a successful run, you change the attacked server to HQ R&D. So now you move to HQ R&D, and then you check again if it is a successful run or not on the changed server.
This is that insider gamer knowledge that was required for me to win the American Continental Championships 2021, so thank you for that.
When they released the comprehensive rules update a week before APAC, you know who sat at his desk for many hours reading through the entire document.
I have not read a single rules document from FFG or Nisei.
I have to trick Jade to come on the show and just explain all the rules to me. It's the only way it will happen.
I mean, I mentioned this on the European Continental stream, and I don't know if you caught it, but what I said about the updated access ruling for Drafter Gank Shenanigans.
Oh yeah.
I love that combo.
It's so cool.
Yeah. I've been trying to make that work on JNet Casual. You gotta do it before people know what's going on. Because once people catch on and you score a one counter Kusanagi, then they're like, oh, okay, I know exactly what you're doing.
I've been trying it out of Argus, not successful yet.
It's gonna happen. Maybe it'll happen tomorrow. Who knows?
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
It kind of reminds me of last year's Worlds. I was actually testing this deck that was quite good, and I didn't end up playing it, but I was playing an Egg Infusion deck with Mason Bellamy and Thimblerig. And you build this like four ice remote, and you just rest Thimblerig, and then you Thimblerig down the server. They lose all their clicks, and you bounce them out, and then you just put their ice on their next turn.
Mason Bellamy is like the pet card.
It's the Daemon of cards, you could say.
Oh my goodness. What a handsome looking upgrade.
With that, I think we're going to wrap it up for tonight. Thank you so much, Greg, for coming on here, teaching us about Gateway, teaching us about Shapers, teaching us about how you're going to win tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun to talk shop, and I appreciate all the the content that both of you put out into the community. So just keep it up. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Have a good one.
You're so busy, Will, these days. Winning soccer, winning continentals.
We got these pizza coupons for this like bar, and they expire on the 31st. And it's like, for each coupon, you get one free pizza per 5 people. So we're gonna go in with 10 people, and we have 3 coupons, and you can stack them. So we're gonna get 6 large pizzas.
Absurd. Cheating the system.
Great.
Greg, tell me about your exciting life.